Music from Count Basie gets us underway in what is a very extraordinary broadcast. I hope it fits into an extraordinary day for you, whether that means special holiday times and the extreme expectation of Christmas Eve or just another Sunday night of jazz listening. My name is Ben Young, and I'll be with you as we listen through a wonderful three-hour sequence to close this special day of broadcasting. The content of it is a celebration of a concert event that was itself a celebration that happened 85 years ago, and it was such a big deal that it happened again 84 years ago, just before Christmas in both cases. To save you the mathematics, this is looking back to 1938, December 23rd of that year, and December 24th of 1939. The concerts were called From Spirituals to Swing. And as the name might suggest, there was a deliberate effort in putting them together to encompass some of the many directions and evolutions involved in African American music. The concerts happened in New York City at Carnegie Hall, and that should raise an eyebrow. 1938 was itself a breakthrough year for vernacular music, as we might say, or popular music, or specific to where we're coming from. Jazz breaking through at Carnegie Hall. This event, From Spirituals to Swing, wasn't necessarily part of the breakthrough or the whole breakthrough itself, but it certainly was an element of what was a new awakening to the idea that people actually would buy tickets, turn out, appreciate, and learn from popular music packages in America's most distinguished concert hall, which had up until that time been predominantly reserved for classical music. So there's something of a breakthrough involved in understanding where the styles are coming from. There was a real corner being turned with this concert of 1938 and its sequel in 1939 in presenting to New York audiences new figures and underrepresented styles of music that were not to be heard often in New York. Now, with that in mind, it's funny that we start off with Count Basie, because Basie could be heard in New York. All of the summer of 1938, he had been holed up in the air-conditioned spot on West 52nd Street that was called the Famous Door, and was lighting up the dance floor there, as small as it was, and the club that was attached to it, and the airwaves when folks could get a piece of Count Basie at the Famous Door. Basie was becoming a known entity, and in the panoply, this whole rainbow of consideration of who the artist would be for From Spirituals to Swing, he represented the very most modern music. In general, that was swing music, which, as unusual as it might be to think of it this way, was of a position in 1938, not too different from what hip-hop is in 2023. It was the recent pop music, and it was still the lingua franca, the language that was spoken by young people, appreciated, paid attention to, and danced to, and it was still new. And it was great. And this is where From Spirituals to Swing was trying to draw at least the points on the curve, and to some extent to connect those dots in putting together a marvelous smorgasbord of music for December 23rd, 1938. For our evening's listening on WICN, we've reconstructed that first concert and also the second one, and we'll play them back for you in something like the order in which those concert events took place. We'll use some of the annotations that happened from the stage in 1939, and a little bit of annotation from this chair. Again, my name is Ben Young, representing WICN as we run into this Christmas Eve night. I'll try to frame what's going on section by section as we appreciate the series called From Spirituals to Swing. We'll tell you more about it as we go through the evening, but I think we're going right now back to the dance floor to hear another one from Count Basie. And this piece was actually relatively newer at the time. We opened our evening with a piece that was Count Basie's theme music called The 1 o'clock Jump, and this is a way of priming your ears for something by hearing the studio version, as you just did, something that you'll hear in its live concert rendering in about half an hour, to appreciate the difference that the concert version is one of the very few times that the piece was played live as its own showpiece, because it became Count Basie's theme music, so it was going to be used in micro as the bumpers, getting onto and off of the stage or into and out of a broadcast. When you hear it live, you'll hear a shortened version, and what you heard earlier was the hit from July the 7th of 1937 that showcased so many of Count Basie's important soloists and the loose style of the way he approached music that was so intriguing and engaging for listeners, for dancers, and for fellow musicians. We're going into a piece that's called Swingin' the Blues, and this, like 1 o'clock Jump, was largely the breakthrough, I guess, or to be credited to the arranger and composer Eddie Durham, who crafted this along with the package of the original book for the Basie Band that he wrote across the year leading up to this point. Swingin' the Blues was recorded and released in 1938. It was a record that you could go and get 3 minutes 78, just like all of the Count Basie records of that time, on gold on blue Decca 78s. And it played through with marvelous solos by Lester Young and Herschel Evans on tenor saxophones, and Buck Clayton and Sweets Edison on trumpet, and the drummer Joe Jones, who were some of the standout figures in the Count Basie Orchestra at that time. I'm saying all this because later in the program, we're going to hear the live version of that piece. And unlike the 1 o'clock Jump, this one's actually longer. And this was a major eye-opener back at the end of the 20th century with the first release of the live version of Swingin' the Blues, that instead of having one 12-bar blues chorus each for all of the soloists I just named, they go for a second helping. Such was the nature of playing live music, unconstrained by having to fit those sounds into a 3-minute playing time on a 78. It's major, and you're cordially invited to indoctrinate yourselves to what Herschel Evans and Lester Young masterfully put into their solos, and then to appreciate the difference when we come around to hear the Swingin' the Blues that was played live at Carnegie Hall. Our subject again is the music from the concert presentations that were called From Spirituals to Swing, Friday, December 23rd, 1938, and Friday, December 24th of 1939. We're going to hear all of those concerts between now and midnight. This is WICN 90.5 Jazz Plus for New England. Thank you. Count Basie has set the table for us with Swingin' the Blues from the 1938 studio recording on Decca Records. We're in the midst of laying out the story of the concert event called From Spirituals to Swing that happened in just about this time of year in 1938. You're listening on 90.5 or WICN.org to a special broadcast tonight. From now until midnight, we'll be unfolding the concert footage and telling you all about it. The story of this concert can't go on too far without naming one of the presenters whose idea it was that there would be such a concert in the first place. I bet you've heard his name before. He's a rather distinguished functionary and journalist and chronicler in the music business and an observer of jazz and other pop musics who we see as a producer, and so he was. The man's name is John Hammond. Not to be confused with his son, who was a blues singer who, I guess I could say, safely lived into his performing years before our eyes for many who are listening to this broadcast in 2023. The father lived a nice long time also and had an impact in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and arguably the 1980s in bringing new talent to our ears. This is the man called John Hammond. Without telling too much of his story, Hammond was a man of principle who, on the one hand, understood great music when he heard it, and he bent over backwards to marshal whatever resources he could of his own or of his colleagues to call attention to that great music, such that we know a lot about Billie Holiday, partly through the advocacy of John Hammond. We know about Bessie Smith's last recording session from 1933, which Hammond produced because he agitated and said, "This Bessie Smith is too important to let go by. Let's have one last go-round." And that's how you have Gimme a Pigfoot, Take Me for a Buggy Ride, Do Your Duty, and so on. And Hammond also was a champion for Count Basie's music, which he had heard on radio in the Midwest and followed his ears to actually want to meet Count Basie and pull the strings that he could to see to it that Basie could, with a slightly larger band than he had been using in Kansas City, break through in Chicago and then journey to the East, where he was in 1938. So this tells you a little bit about John Hammond, that he appreciated the important sound of swing in music. Now, when I say he's a principled person, Hammond also understood that African-American performers, such as all the people we've just named, were behind most of the trend-setting and the style-shaping and the creativity for the development of this music, and yet, generally speaking, were being underrepresented, underpaid, and under-acknowledged as the progenitors of the music. So there came an idea for Hammond that part of the effort to reverse that would be to bring talent to big stages and big attention that was being neglected. The other part of it was that he wanted to do this in a hall that was integrated. And in 1938, that was a little bit of an eyebrow raiser. Maybe in Carnegie Hall, not so much as it would have been in Texas or in Louisiana or Florida and the segregated South, but it still was unusual. And Hammond said, "I'm going to have an audience that will be black listeners and white listeners together." And by the time of the second concert in 1939, there was also integration on the bandstand with black and white performers. So these were some of the objectives for this From Spirituals to Swing concert, and John Hammond brought his tools to bear. He knew how to get Count Basie to a concert, and that was going to happen. He eventually was going to get Benny Goodman into the second year's concert. That also was not too tough. Hammond was in touch with performers who represented earlier pre-swing styles of jazz and knew where to find them and make the offer that they also accepted, and looped out to find blues performers, gospel performers, and folk performers who could be brought into the same heading. Now, remember, we just mentioned Bessie Smith a second ago, and that John Hammond had an ongoing relationship with Bessie Smith's music. It was ongoing. Back in 1933, when it was really hard to make a record, he made a record with Bessie Smith, and we're still listening to music from that date. Life got a little bit harder and less appreciative for Bessie Smith through the 1930s, and she died in 1937 before this concert could really be a reality. So John Hammond's contribution in the concert was offered in the name of Bessie Smith, to whom the entire event was dedicated. And if you were at the concert, you'd flip to the back page of the program and note that a Bessie Smith tribute album, one of the very first pop music albums on Columbia Records to be offered, was being advertised. It wasn't quite called a memorial record, but it was effectively a memorial record, and this effectively was a memorial concert for Bessie Smith. Bessie Smith couldn't be there. Her relative, who was as close as you could get, at least in family terms, a woman named Ruby Smith, who many argue is not literally related to Bessie Smith, but was one of the running mates and partygoers along with Bessie Smith, was going to take the stage and sing in that blues milieu. Likewise, John Hammond had wanted to have Robert Johnson to perform here. His Vocalion records were just breaking through to people's ears, and he was actually being pursued for making another set of records just at the time that he died, only some days before this concert. So, therefore, he was unavailable to make it either. So what did happen was exactly as follows. I'm reading to you from the program of December 23rd, 1938's concert bill for the concert event called From Spirituals to Swing. We're talking about it on December 25 of 2023. Good tidings to you, and I hope it's been and will continue to be a great holiday season for all of you listening right now on WICN 90.5 FM. From Spirituals to Swing was slated to start with an introduction that reached all the way back, not performers from Native Africa, but recordings that were made on location in West Africa by a team that had recently brought them to modern ears. That was not too easy to do, by the way, to make a field recording in 1938, yet it was done and the recordings were played on stage. After that, the theme music for the concert, as for our broadcast tonight, was offered by Count Basie and his orchestra as sort of giving the keynote address. Roman numeral 1, Spirituals and Holy Roller Hymns. That's where we're going shortly. Mitchell's Christian Singers were engaged. That's a group of four people from North Carolina who had regular jobs during the week but sang on weekends unaccompanied, and we'll introduce them more specifically in a moment. Then Sister Tharp, as she was called, and cited to have been from Florida. She was recently appearing at the Cotton Club, but generally, as Hammond puts it, couldn't really be found outside of church performance much before this event. That is Sister Rosetta Tharp, who played guitar and sang. The next thing on the agenda, Roman numeral 2, was called Soft Swing and would have been represented by the Kansas City Six. This is basically a subunit out of the Count Basie Orchestra with one on a part, electric guitar, acoustic guitar, one trumpet, one reed player, drums, and bass. Roman numeral 3, harmonica playing. This was based on the recent introduction of John Hammond to a man called Sanford Terry. You know him as Sonny Terry, the blind performer from North Carolina, who Hammond had run across in an effort to meet up with Mitchell's Christian Singers and engage them for the concert. And he was actually looking for a different blues performer and heard Sonny Terry and decided this was actually the better talent to bring to his concert. Roman 4, Blues, Ruby Smith, Joe Turner, Big Bill, which is Big Bill Brunzi, Jimmy Rushing, who sang as one of the voices with Count Basie's orchestra, and Helen Humes, who sang as one with the Basie orchestra also. Fascinatingly, each of these performers is cited along with where they come from, noting that Ruby Smith from Norfolk, Joe Turner from Kansas City, Big Bill from Chicago, Jimmy Rushing recently from Kansas City, I guess what traced all the way back to Oklahoma City, and Helen Humes was from Louisville, Kentucky. The first half of the concert ended with Boogie Woogie piano playing by Albert Ammons, Mead Lux Lewis, and Pete Johnson. The first two came from Chicago, and Pete Johnson was based in Kansas City. We're going to hear music from almost all of these performers in these sets and in this order, and we'll kick it off with Mitchell's Christian Singers.
I'll tell me what more can my Jesus do? Now tell me what more can my Jesus do? Now he has laid the foundation. He overloads the way. Tell me
Ain't that good news? I'm gonna live.